Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
The Fender Precision Bass is the most important musical instrument of all time.
That's quite a statement.
Oh, for God's sake!
That is my argument on this week's Patreon episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Myself, Jay Cross, and precision lover Joe Branton fight it out to see what we think is the most important musical instrument of all time. Patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. The Fender Precision Bass is the most important musical instrument of all time.
That's quite a statement.
Absolute rubbish.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Hello, Mark.
And Joe Branton.
Hello, Mark.
Ah, feisty as ever. Matt and I, our regular co-host slash life partner, is still off on holiday. Where is he? Italy.
I think he's in Italy.
I don't know where he is.
He's definitely Italy. I called him the other day. We said this literally on the last podcast, but I think he's still in
Italy. I'm just surprised that he's away for
this amount of time.
Yeah.
It is weird, isn't it? He's so lazy.
He does take long holidays.
He's the laziest one.
He doesn't regularly have holidays, but when he does, he goes for a proper two-week extravaganza.
He's always on holiday.
I can't remember the last time I had a two-week holiday. Probably 20 years ago, something like that.
What about when you went travelling?
That's true. But that was a different thing.
All right. That was my gap year.
That was actually when I was away for 8 weeks.
Was my gap year?
It was 8 weeks. But no, a 2 week standard, bog standard holiday.
Right, okay. So what you're saying is you can't remember the last time you had exactly 2 weeks on holiday.
What I'm saying is people go for 10 days or 2 weeks normally, okay, don't they?
Or if you're Billy Moneybags over there, 8 weeks.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to see a bit of the world. Yeah. You got to see a bit of the world. How's it going, gentlemen?
Yes, good.
Yes, also good. Thank you.
It's been a real busy week. I feel like this week has been non-stop since we last spoke. Firstly, it was the best ever episode of Twin Peaks.
Holy moly.
Which we shouldn't talk about on the podcast because Joe's not seen it and it will blow his tiny little mind. Yeah. But do come and chat to us about that on the Guitar Nerds forum because I need to talk to someone about it. Only one person at work has seen it and I just want to talk to someone about it.
Nobody I work with, I don't think anybody has watched Twin Peaks at all. I've lent the box set to someone and someone else said they're going to watch it. I'm sat there by my... I can't do it. I just have to wait and talk to Maddie about it when I get home.
It's mind-blowing.
It's so good. It's so good.
But let's talk about that on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. It's been basically non-stop. So we recorded the podcast on Monday. Tuesday night, Joe and I went... Let's dive into this straight away, actually, because it has been quite a busy week. So
it has been.
Tuesday, we went up to Stansted.
Oh, yes. We shared a room.
We did. You may have seen that.
Days Inn.
Indeed. A luxurious Days Inn hotel. You may have seen that if you're on the Facebook group. We did a little live stream
I didn't like it because where that Days Inn was, there was no bar.
Yeah,
when we got there, and
which is a struggle for you these days, isn't it?
It was just like I wanted something to do with the evening with you, and we didn't have anything to do. So the only thing that was open and nearby was a Starbucks.
Yeah,
but when I got to the counter, I sort of got flustered, and Mark made it was about like 11 o'clock at night, and Mark made an excellent decision and asked for a peppermint tea, and I was just so flustered that I asked for a coconut based coffee frappuccino.
Like an absolute child. Like, the only people that were in there were like truckers who were just having a, you know,
and it was quite cold.
Yeah, a cup of coffee to keep him going. Yeah, it wasn't nice weather. I just, yes, can I get the one with the soy cream, please?
Yeah, it was bad. And I couldn't sleep. We had to be up at 4 to get on a flight. And I was just laying awake in bed.
So this was all in aid of, we were invited to Yamaha Motorbike Headquarters in Milan.
Milano.
Yes, Milano, if you will. And all because Yamaha were launching some new products, and rather than fly everyone out to Japan, which I think would be a very costly exercise, I think it was decided that it should be at the motorbike headquarters. Beautiful building. You're like, not beautiful from the outside, it was kind of just a, you know, like an industrial unit, but inside, some of the, I mean, I don't know anything about motorbikes at all, but they look pretty nice, didn't they?
I assume
you don't know much either.
I didn't really notice any of them. I know they were there, I just didn't care. And there was so much cool equipment there that I really didn't actually look at them.
Oh, so in the... again, I don't know much about motorbikes, but I know that Valentino Rossi is... He's like a motorbike man, isn't he?
I mean, you're looking at me as if I know anything about motorbikes.
Well, we share a mutual friend who is very into motorbikes, and I've heard him mention that name many times.
Why are we talking about motorbikes?
I'm trying to set the scene.
I think saying Valentino Rossi is kind of being like, oh, yeah, you like football. Leo Messi?
Yeah.
You know, David Beckham.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what saying Valentino Rossi is.
But there wasn't... David Beckham wasn't there.
Was he not?
No.
But there was some Valentino Rossi stuff there. I don't. Is he a Yamaha rider? I don't know. But
well, I mean, I assume if there was some sort of stuff.
Oh my god, this has gone so off topic.
Yeah, well, I'm setting the scene. So the whole point for having us there was that Yamaha were launching some new products, and this, I guess, kind of spills into the news. But we won't go there yet. No need for the news jingle yet.
No, okay. Can I do the Yamaha event title in the news for us?
Yeah, do that. Okay, so the event was called...
Tools of Tomorrow's Musician.
Close. That was very close.
Was it close? Was that
Tools
it was?
For
yeah, that was
Tomorrow's
it.
Musician. So the whole idea was to show off these brand new BB basses, which I didn't realise. BB stands for broad bass.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Oh yeah,
which is a cool name. They should always just call them broad bass.
Yeah, which now cool, now appears on the headstock. But we'll go into the details shortly.
So it's called the Yamaha broad bass bass.
No, they're called the Yamaha broad bass.
The Yamaha broad bass.
Okay, so when we say Yamaha BB bass,
yeah, we're saying
it's
the broad
like when
bass
you say
bass.
The broad you're going to use the ATM machine.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So they were launching some new basses. Plus, I think it was a chance for a lot of people to get their
pin number.
Indeed, pin number. Indeed. I think it was a chance for a lot of people to get their first try at the Helix LT.
Yeah, and also great because in line and geniusly in line with the launch of the four types of new BB bass, they also added some... Oh god, I just did it.
I nearly didn't say anything.
In line with the release of the four different types of broad bass, they released new amp models for the Line 6 Helix, new bass models, which was totally awesome. So like a whole, and they had some on the original model, but they've really given a wide variety now. So now the Helix is as much a bassist's, you know, complete answer as it is a guitarist's, which is cool.
If you can hear that in the background, by the way, Jay's flat seems to be getting attacked by angry seagulls.
It's okay. All the windows. There's one window upstairs that's open.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I'm concerned.
That's so they don't have thumbs.
Okay, good. So the event was structured as such where we would we went in and saw some of the new basses.
It wasn't just those two things though. It wasn't just the Helix and the broad bass.
There were some new acoustic guitars as well.
The new Trans. We spoke about it last year on Gear of the Year. Was it on Gear of the Year? What do they call that series? The Transatlantic?
No.
That was a Mesa Boogie.
It was Trans something.
Yep. Indeed.
But anyway, the new range of acoustics, which I think I was...
Wasn't it just called the Trans Acoustic?
Yeah, that's it. The Trans Acoustic. So I was really behind them on Gear of the Year. I don't know if you remember, Jay. These are the acoustics that have actual mechanical reverb.
Oh, yeah, I do remember.
Chorus and reverb built in, which is totally cool. So they
it's not mechanical, is it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Well, there's a spring inside.
No, I don't think it works like that.
Right, okay.
But there is a mechanism that does
right, it. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they had a new range of those, which were great because kind of the new series were kind of way more classic looking and in line with sort of acoustic trends, I guess. The sort of the whole parlory thing that's kicking around at the moment, which was totally cool. So there were those, and also it was the first time we actually got to see in real life the Line 6 Shuriken.
Oh yeah, it was.
Which is the latest and most advanced version of
the Variax.
The Variax sort of type.
Very
of thing.
Very weird looking guitar.
Very metal. Pioneered extremely by, metal.
Yeah, well, it's a satin black baritone scale length single humbucker in the bridge. Obviously, you can literally have any pickup selection you want using the software. But what was really good is they had 12 foot Ninja there, Stevic, the guitarist from 12 foot Ninja, and he was demonstrating how versatile the Variax was by introducing us to Punjabi metal.
Right.
Where he was flicking seamlessly using the Helix between, I can't remember the name of the instrument. It's that one strung.
Yeah, it's some sort of Indian single string kind of drone style instrument.
Yeah, yeah. He was flicking between that and like a drop aid guitar.
All just playing on the same guitar, but using a foot switch to switch between the two. So
right, weird. Minute.
Yeah, it sounded actually pretty convincing.
It was great, actually, I really appreciated someone going into some depth without sort of the sales pitch side of it. Like he was explaining how useful it would be in real terms. Like he's a real guitarist in a metal band, and I think one of the coolest things I thought was that you can turn, as well as being able to change the tuning on any string, being able to model, you know, the pickups in the style of, you know, Strats, Tellys, humbucking guitars, things like that. You can also raise the volume or drop the volume on individual strings if you want, like, something to cut through for some reason.
What, using a Helix?
Using the workbench.
Using the foot switch.
Yeah. No, using workbench.
Okay. And then you trigger it with the Helix.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah, sure.
But also using Line 6 workbench, the most interesting one was being able to turn off strings, which is quite cool for sections. So,
and you could also tune each string individually. So, for example, if you were, let's say you were doing a banjo piece and it was something that you knew how to play on banjo, you could essentially set your guitar up using the top four or five strings, depending on the banjo style. But you could turn everything else off and then tune each individual string.
Sure, so. And also, if you think about it, bands like Meshuggah, who do a lot of rhythmic stuff, they put tape on the, they use eight strings and tape off their high like three or so strings for all their rhythmic stuff. Like live, they'll play guitars with tape over the higher strings.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't ring out. This essentially is an answer to all of that very
it's quite niche.
Yeah,
all that stuff is quite niche.
It is niche, yeah, but it's great. I thought it was incredible that it was that.
Well, I guess the thing is though, is if you do enough niche things in one product,
you're bound to hit enough people. So just kind of going back to the structure of the event, so we were introduced to the new products. I believe Yamaha basically have kind of rejigged how they run their guitar division now, and that everything used to be quite disparate, I think, and it's now Yamaha guitars comprises of Yamaha guitars and Line 6.
Are we not going to get Line 6 branded stuff, or
it's not very much rebranding. Using the logo, it's just
completely
all the ideas and all the personnel are essentially coming out of one place and are all, you know, part of one team.
Yeah,
right. So very much Line 6 and Yamaha ideas in the future will be very joined.
Yeah, yeah. And then we got to hear some of the new BB basses and some really good performances. You'll have to remind, because there's about four or five people playing.
Yeah,
there was one fellow in particular whose playing was very nice. Mm-hmm. Mickey Santa Maria, whose playing was really good, super tasteful. There was a lot of slap going on, and in a kind of world of slap, he did some really nice like melodic stuff.
Obviously, you and me, I find it difficult to really tell what a bass sounds like when people slap.
Yeah.
Because it's so toneless. It's such a toneless thing to do.
Yeah, it's more about the skill of the player as opposed to...
It's about the percussion of
bass.
So you're turning a bass into a drum. It's weird. So I thought it was odd having to sit through these two, like really sort of slap-heavy players. I was like, no, I still have no idea what this sounds like. But then... this third dude was really great, like really tasteful, played like a slow track as well, where he wasn't, there was, like the slap was very minimal.
Yeah.
And it was some great melody lines. He was a really interesting player. And actually I thought the bass he was playing was the best out of the options.
Well, except
the one I liked.
So I was going to say, so we did a few other bits. We went and saw people using the basses for recording, and we got to try them ourselves. Filmed a bit of video, which will be going up on the YouTube channel. But I guess people are probably familiar with the Helix. The Transacoustic, I would totally recommend go and have a look online and check out what that can do. But do you want to give us a quick rundown on the is it three or four new models?
Four if we count the Japanese.
Yeah, okay, so four model. New models of BB bass.
Yeah. That's right. So so about like 4 years ago, I was invited to go on these like R&D sessions. I can't remember if we mentioned this last week.
We did.
Week. Oh, we
oh
did,
not
did
last
we?
Week. We've mentioned it at the time when you were there, I think.
Right, yeah. So about 4 years ago, I was invited.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah, I think so.
Crikey.
I think maybe 3 years ago. But I was invited to go on these R&D sessions for the new Yamaha BB bass because at the broad bass because at the time I was playing. Do you remember I used to have a collection? Because I had a 1024. I had a 424, and I had the old 1979 BB 800, and I had the BB Billy Sheehan.
Yeah,
which was the 7-1.
The old triple B.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
It was the 714.
All of those. Yeah, 714. Yeah, and yeah, so they invited me up and they were talking through loads of options, and it was really cool. And I'm sure, like, you know, what I was saying wasn't revolutionary. What I was saying was I'm sure what a lot of people that they asked were saying, which is why they've adopted a lot of those things. Standard size pickups, the old BBs always had like they were like Fender-esque in the precision or jazz style pickups, but they were slight. They were their own shape, so you couldn't retrofit.
Right. Okay,
and I think that's a big thing. Like people like to retrofit to their,
or just at least have the option. You know, let's say the pickup down the line, the pickup goes down.
Mm.
You're not restricted to then. You have to go and find a Yamaha BB pickup to replace it with. You know, you
specifically
could.
That series, like those.
Yeah.
Those shaped pickups had never existed before.
Completely.
Either. So it would have been very tricky to retrofit.
Yeah.
So yeah, they've gone for standard size, still Yamaha designed, but nice that they're now standard size. They've kept some of the really cool things, like they introduced 45-degree through body stringing, which I thought it was cool, rather than the full 90, which mm-hmm. can, of course, like cut off some of the sustain of the string. So the 45 made loads of sense.
Yep.
They've introduced, it's a 6-bolt neck now, but the lowest two are diagonally up into the neck,
That was the weirdest thing on there, because I think pretty sure I've seen the 90-degree stringing before. I'm sure they've done that on other instruments. 45-degree stringing.
Yeah, they did it on the last series.
Yeah. I haven't seen these bolts before.
So
but
those bolts were on the Yamaha Attitude. They've been on the Yamaha Attitude for maybe the last decade,
certainly
the last few. And it's something that Billy Sheehan introduced because, have you ever seen like the pictures of his old P bass?
Yeah.
Where he had like plectrums and like a credit card folded in half, all in the neck pocket, like behind, because the amount he bends the neck was wrecking the joint.
Oh, and wow,
so,
okay.
So he'd like shimmed it with bits of plastic and stuff.
Just whatever he could find, like a bowler.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole idea of the diagonal bolts are that it deals with the fact that he's going to bend that neck.
Right, okay.
And that's just something that... And obviously it probably improves sustain somewhat, so they've added that as a standard feature, which is great. Still got the quarter sawn 5-piece neck. I can't remember what the construction is. Walnut, maybe?
Sure,
I think so.
Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah, it was a dark wood. It's but sandwich bodies this time around as well.
Yeah, which is cool
because they're essentially trying to get back to what the original, a lot of the things from the original BBs, which are, you know, through necks and stuff like that. So their solution around it now is that, you know, through necks are expensive. They make things heavy. They're harder to maintain.
Probably don't stand up to the rigors of being Bent quite as much.
No.
Well, I don't know, actually.
Well, it probably won't
get as much of an effect from a bend,
I think,
would you?
Maybe,
I don't know. Italy.
Maybe when the BB was a through neck thing, I think it was a different time and people wanted different things from music. I think very much now, the broad bass is a rock bass guitar, and if you want to play a rock bass guitar, you need a bolt-on bass.
Yeah,
like, right, okay.
You know,
yeah.
it's definitely
adds a bit more snap to things as well, yeah. Like, through neck basses tend to be they have a bit less attack.
But
to
the sandwich is interesting. So yeah. it's Alder operating as the bread of the sandwich, and then what was in the middle?
Sure.
What was the ham? It was ash, wasn't it?
Sure. No, I actually can't remember. But no. Yeah, again, another sort of darker wood in
what
the centre.
What was the ham? That's like Mark's new segment.
Yeah, yeah. What's the ham? I might actually start doing that. That's just my little sign-off every week, like Jerry Springer. Like, what's the ham? Yeah, I can't remember. Again, it was a darker wood, which is what it would have been with the original through necks, I believe. So.
Yeah. So, so that was a really great feature. And, four series. So, other than that, they've also made them slightly lighter and slimmer than the other ones.
It's very, very subtle, but they've changed the body shape slightly. They're less... The way I described it to the marketing guy was they used to look a bit dinner platey in that they were just huge and round and a bit like featureless, whereas now they've kind of put a bit more of that back in. They've put a bit of kind of curve to things.
Yeah, that was cool.
So four models.
Four models. So you've got the entry. So I think it's the 2, 4, and 7 and then the pro, which is the Japanese. So in the 2 series, all available in 4 and 5 string, all series. In the 2 series is your entry level, and now they're hitting the shelves at like sub £300. Still come in like a slightly more standard range of finishes, but still like
there's no sparkle orange this time around.
No. Oh, that was great. Do you remember that one?
Yeah,
that was brilliant. So the 2 series operates as the entry level. So like sort of lighter weight or sort of less heavy duty tuners and bridge, like the hardware, and I imagine the pickups probably aren't the same on that series. But for an instrument that is operating at the same sort of price point as Squire, I think that's a real run for.
Oh wow! I didn't realise they were.
Yep. Yeah. There's some
that's like entry level.
Yeah. Still with the 3-body strung. Still with the 5-piece neck. Like. That's pretty cool. Like,
yeah,
to be able to do that at that price point, I think is really impressive.
Right, cool.
Yeah, passive circuitry on that one as well, which we'll come to later on because there is one that isn't passive.
And then the 4 series, which is hitting the shelves at sub like around £400. They're introducing some interesting finishes on there. There's a teal.
Oh yeah, nice. Yeah,
which I'm pretty
transparent.
Into. Yeah, I don't think so.
I didn't see that one there actually.
Yeah, it was there.
Oh,
was
okay, there. I missed that one.
Really cool sort of upgraded hardware on this one, so you know, slightly more premium, you know, certainly an upgrade from the 2 series. Then up from that you've got the 7 series, which is the active model, which incidentally has an active passive switch, which you know is something that Fender don't put on until they're like elite series. So I thought that was really good.
3-band EQ and a pickup blend, is that
pickup
right?
Blend, yeah. That's right. And and what was totally cool about those is they come in like a satin black or a sunburst.
Yeah.
But the necks are like a satin black as well, even on the back and the headstock as well, which was really cool. Even on the sunburst one, the neck is black.
Worth mentioning as well, they've trimmed the size of the headstock down as well.
Slightly,
because they were a bit ridiculous on the old ones. They were
huge.
Man.
Yeah. Well, they were cool. So that's the 7 series. And then the Pro, which were, again, passive, but this time sort of like just like gorgeous, like really well-made Japanese bass. And unbelievably... hitting the shelves at less than £1,500.
Yeah, and they coming in at like $1,299,
something like that.
Or maybe just a touch over that. But yeah, around that kind of money, I think.
Yeah,
is
which
where
is great considering the previous series that did exactly this was the 2024 and 2025 series, and they were $2,000.
Yeah,
for the Japanese models. Like now we're looking at exactly the same thing. Like, and really nice attention to detail on this series. Like you got like a lacquered neck on that one, so it had that more sort of vintage look. The slightly tarnished tuners and bridge. I was very, very impressed with them. We've almost definitely spoken for long enough about bass, but
yeah,
they were really, really good. welcome addition to sort of the bass world at this relatively stagnant time for the instrument.
Definitely, definitely. There doesn't seem to be much new bass stuff coming out. So, you know, just a kind of reworking of the classics from Yamaha is definitely welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I got to try a Helix LT, and it looked... Yeah. It looked and sounded very good. I was quite surprised just how easy it is to use.
So. I really like the Helix LT.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of time for it. It got rid of all the things I didn't like about the larger model. And of course, at like £800 or less than £800, I think now.
It's not a huge amount of money, is it?
No, exactly.
For what you get. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about this week not stopping, firstly, we should mention that we met some really nice people at the event as well. Yeah. So, bumped into Mary Spender, who has been on the Patreon podcast, runs a very good YouTube channel, and is also a podcast listener, which is good. So, bit of a shout out there. But also met Hanny, who you probably want to describe what they do. They do stuff for the kids that I don't really understand.
Right. Well, it's two separate Instagram channels, which is Annie Plays Guitar and Hannah Plays Keys, which... You know, you should all go and check out. Really cool. Just like an Instagram channel of videos, but like great playing, like two really interesting a guitarist and a keys player. Hannah does also play bass. Yeah, they were there. And who else was there?
Well, I was going to say they'll probably be coming on the podcast at some point. But my kind of major catch of the day was I got to meet Marcus Ryle, I think is how you pronounce his surname, who is the founder and, original owner of Line 6. So he is a super interesting guy. I got to chat to him for a little bit. Talked about how he started at Oberheim Synths, moved on to work for Alesis, and then while he was at Alesis, developed... Line 6 and started working on the pod and the Axis 212 and things like that. So yeah, had a
quite the career.
I know had a very brief chat with him, but I think we're going to try and get him for a podcast.
Yeah. Oh great, yeah, good. That'd be cool.
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk to him about like pod. I just want to say like you actually made the pod, and for him to go yeah
okay. So when you say he was the original owner of Line 6,
he's the founder and like original designer, and
was he the owner right up until the point that they got bought by Yamaha
somewhere? Yeah, I think that's how it works.
Right,
basically,
okay,
I've got his card somewhere, and that says his current title.
Right, but... so he still is.
Yeah,
like
he's head of Line 6 now.
Right,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. He'll be coming on the pod to talk about all things in the history of Line 6, which I think is going to be really interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
Definitely.
But yeah, it was a really good day. Other than seeing those acts early, were you going to talk about the rest of the day, or are you moving on?
I was going to move on. We talked about the Yamaha a fair amount, but yeah, we saw Peter Hook, and we should say this actually,
because
it's the podcast. You finally got to see Billy Sheehan in the real life.
Billy Sheehan. I did see Billy Sheehan. You didn't stick around.
No, I had to go.
Unbelievable.
I was tired.
So this was we were, after we'd sort of been to the event for the whole day, they took us to this to a venue for dinner and a show, and
all right, Mum,
and we got a table at the front, which I was so chuffed about,
because
Billy Sheehan was going to be on, and we had a table like full of all the best ones. We were there with Annie and Hannah and with Mary Spender, and you know, Billy Sheehan was about to come on, and all of you guys were like, oh, yeah, we're going to go back.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and
us,
I was like,
you know,
fine, I'll stay. I stayed and I used all the free drinks tokens that you guys left on the table, and I watched Billy Sheehan alone.
You had basically the best.
Were you absolutely by yourself?
Well, I was standing at the very front, like smiling at Billy Sheehan with a cocktail in hand, but you know.
Just like that, mouth open.
Well,
I don't really care about seeing Billy Sheehan, but I would have loved to have seen Joe's reaction to seeing Billy Sheehan.
That when he first walked out. When was the moment that you saw him for the first time? Was it during the day, or was it when he stepped
up
on stage?
In the evening, it was when he stepped up on stage. And there wasn't very much food I could eat, so sort of by this point, I've been surviving on a diet of wine.
Right, okay.
But yeah, so by the time he was on stage,
I was gone.
Fantastic.
Some of us need our beauty sleep. You know, Joe's blessed with rugged good looks, so he can stay out. But yeah,
I believe it.
The rest of us had to go and back to the hotel.
Unbelievable. You guys were so lightweight.
I've got an excuse.
Night.
I'm old. Surely the young kids shouldn't be.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the Instagram generation. They get the selfie and then they bugger off.
So. Yeah, exactly. Although I pretty much missed breakfast the next day on account of it.
Yeah, you did, and you look rough. So yeah, that was fun for everyone. So yeah, that was good. And but like I said, this week has been non-stop because Saturday, Jay and I moseyed on up to Hyde Park to not only catch up with our friends in Beach Slang and hang out and see them play, but to watch some bands. Green Day, Rancid,
The Hives, The Damned.
Yep.
I love The Hives.
We didn't see Stiff Little Fingers, but they played. We
the
didn't
Hives
see
the still play Stranglers. One of their guitarists still play an Esquire.
Yes, there was some sort of telly.
I tell you what,
and
the Hives, had a fantastic arrangement of guitars.
Yeah, they do, man. They've got great taste, and great taste in basses as well. Splits between Ricky's and telly basses.
He was only playing a P bass.
Right. Yeah. Talking about that,
I don't actually believe you because he doesn't play P bass.
Every single band that we saw at Hyde Park. So, who did we see? We saw The Damned, Swimmers, Beach Slang, Green Day, Rancid. Probably it. What were they called?
Public Access TV.
Every single band at Hyde Park on Saturday was using a P bass. Didn't see a single other bass there. It was all P basses all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't think there was even any like modified stuff.
Yes, there was. Mike Dirnt plays...
Well, he was playing his signature.
Matt Freeman has a signature.
Yeah, he wasn't playing it.
No, he was just he was playing an American Professional or something. But I think that's kind of led me to think about the Patreon this week, where we should talk about why the Fender P bass is the most important musical instrument of all time.
I'm with you.
We should definitely do that.
You are both wrong.
The instrument
I don't like completely being with Mark 100%, but I
you two are always on the same side.
But
and then there's me fighting the corner.
It's quite easy for us to be on the same side against you, Joe.
It was great. It was a really good day. So it was part of the British Summertime Festival.
Yeah.
Which is, from what I've gathered, it's kind of an event that has to be put on because in order for Hyde Park to retain its live music license, there has to be at least 7 concerts or 7 live music events there per year.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it loses its status.
Yeah.
So, they have to do gigs there. And... It was fantastic. Like it was run really well. We got through really quickly.
Yep.
The event looked fantastic. Like all the concession stalls were done up kind of like medieval houses almost.
They were like
Tudor
ye old tavern type thing.
Oh, that sounds
great.
It
looked really good, and the main stage looked absolutely phenomenal. It was it had these huge fake oak trees either side of it. Now I'm not really one for big live music events in general because I think, you know, you can be too far away.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about the crowd situation.
Well, yeah, okay. And that is something that I didn't particularly agree. So because Mark and I were there as friends of Beach Slang.
Superstar VIPs, I think, is the word that you're looking for.
So, yeah, Ed McNulty, the bass player of Beach Slang, is an old friend of ours.
He's been on the podcast.
And he's been on the podcast a couple of times. He wanted to come on whilst he was here as well, but the timing just didn't work out this time. So we'll have to save that for now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Next time. But he sorted us tickets out, and it turned out that the tickets that we got were guest tickets.
Yeah.
Which meant that we were able to get into what I think is sometimes known...
Can I just say, sorry, before we get too into this, if someone isn't being murdered outside.
No, it's just, there's just some children playing because it's sunny.
There's like a trampoline outside. So sorry if like you can hear people screaming and stuff in the background. I'll try and edit it to a minimum. Okay. But
yeah, so we got access to what I think is usually known as the Golden Circle, which is the area directly in front of the stage.
Ah, right.
And then, so that's sort of fenced off. And I have to say, like, I felt really guilty every time we turned around and looked at the people behind us who had paid 75 quid or something to see their favourite band, and they were 100 foot away?
Probably somewhere about 40 to 50 metres, I would say, from the stage. And so there were people there. Like, we just strolled in, obviously, on these guest passes. Like, loads of space around us. Yeah. Particularly watching Rancid, because all the people who had paid to get into the Golden Circle, I think they paid about 250 quid. They didn't care about Rancid. They just want to see Green Day.
Yeah.
So we sort of...
God, this sounds like...
It was honestly awful.
It was weird. So we sort of strolled in, loads of space around us.
What has punk become?
Well, we were kind of the only people wanting to watch Rancid in that bit. And then you turned around and the barrier, there was people in like Rancid t-shirts, like crushed against the barrier trying to sing along and stuff.
I was so excited though, because I've never seen Rancid before, and they're one of the first sort of big punk bands, one of the first sort of real punk bands I got into, one of my earliest influences. And just watching them and knowing every word to every song and singing along fantastically, as I'm sure you will attest to, Mark.
Oh god, it was the worst singing.
Was absolutely great, and like the whole setup was amazing. Matt Freeman's bass sounded wicked,
but he wasn't playing his signature mode.
I think his signature P bass is just based off of a 70s P bass.
I don't think he's ever actually played the Squire ones from most far.
I've never
seen a picture of him playing
but
them.
Presumably he's just like, of course I'm not taking my 70s P bass on a plane. Absolutely not, which is why an American Pro or something.
In the interview he does about it, it's based on like a 77 P bass that he has.
Yeah.
Where the truss rod's broken. So
the action is
like a foot off the board, and he plays it anyway, but he says in that he's like, yeah, I'm the only person who can play it because it's so
ridiculous.
Unplayable now.
But yeah, so he had that. Lars Fredriksson had his signature LTD, which is camo Viper.
Yeah. The Viper, listeners, is the
SG.
The SG version. Style, the sort of offset SG. It looks awful.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, it looks really bad.
I don't. But and then Tim Armstrong's there, was playing his signature Gretsch and
his salmon pink.
No, it was the black
salmon,
one.
Oh, the matte black.
It wasn't a signature. That was the real deal.
Oh, well, that was
the original one.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the one that his signature is based on.
Right.
Is that
a right-handed one that he plays upside down?
His one is a right-handed guitar that he plays upside down and is strung upside down.
Yeah.
I just thought that, you know, watching Rancid, they've got such completely different guitar sounds. You know, Lars Fredriksson uses humbucking guitar with two, you know, Marshall DSLs or whatever it is. And, you know, I just think that works so well when he's playing that, you know, really tight, cool. And, you know, Tim Armstrong just jumps around and doesn't play guitar. Jumps around and holds it. And, occasionally will play an open chord. And then every now and again do a really cool like reggae solo.
But you couldn't even really hear the solo though. It was pointless him even holding the guitar.
He's so funny. But I mean, he's been doing the same thing for 30 years.
Well, yeah,
you know, you look at those
yeah.
Operation Ivy videos and he's just barely playing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was amazing. Really, really fun. Really good day.
And then Green Day was, just a lot of Les Paul Juniors, and then the Strat, wasn't it, basically?
So that's the Strat only came out. Thing the I Fernandez like about came Green out. Day. Is, oh, the Fernandez
well,
came out.
You know,
sort of. Probably not the Fernandez.
No. I assume it was probably a Fender Custom Shop.
I don't know who makes it. I know he's had a few different kind of copies made of blue.
But the only thing I like about Green Day, their guitar choice.
Yeah, yeah. Solid. So he was playing the... one that Rock and Roll Relics refinished, which is
the black and white,
Stars and Stripes. American flag. And he was playing the guitar that he's calling Blue Number 2, which is a refinished, what looks like a refinished, you know, the Saturn Les Paul Juniors from a couple of years ago. Looks like it's that refinished in a like a Daphne blue, like the Strat, with a bigger white, bright white single ply scratch plate and some sort of humbucker in the bridge.
Yeah. It sounded great.
It sounded great and it looked amazing. Like if Gibson do a signature model of that, that would be a
brilliant guitar. That, what was the hollow body?
No, unsurprisingly not.
The one that was released as a Billy Armstrong model.
No one's ever
275.
But no one's actually ever seen him play it.
All the acoustic parts, interestingly, were done by Jason White, who's the other guitar player, playing a 335 into some sort of acoustic simulator type thing.
Well, up until because I've not seen Green Day in probably 12 years. I think 2005 was when I last saw them. And we bumped into a friend of mine who sees them fairly regularly. And he said, right, you know, because we were like, oh, I only really care about, well, what's now kind of the, you know, the very early stuff. And we knew they weren't going to play anything off the first two. Well, they said they did. They played 2,000 Light Years Away, which is amazing.
Oh, cool.
But he said, listen, just if you're not that bothered, you don't need to watch the first half hour and you don't really need to watch the last hour. So we sort of, we were hanging out with Beachlang, talking to them, and then rocked up after they, you know, spent half an hour doing their intro and playing some new songs. And we saw a load of good stuff. They played She, they played Basket Case, they played a load of cool stuff. And then when Jason Fries, Josh Fries from the Vandals and Guns N' Roses and No Doubt and Korn. No, he wasn't in Korn, was he? Perfect Circle.
Yeah.
Once his brother came out and started playing Careless Whisper on saxophone, we kind of realised that it was time for us to go.
To go.
We got an early train home.
Right.
But, so when the acoustic guitars and stuff came out,
I looked at the set list afterwards, and we missed. You know, they played the full 12-minute version of Jesus of Suburbia and American Idiot and Good Riddance, Time of Your Life, which are just songs that I just don't need to see.
Great. So, basically, it's been a very busy week and I've seen a lot of guitars.
I was thinking about this, though. You say it was a very busy week.
Yeah.
What you mean is you did two things.
Well, yeah, but...
opposed to usually doing zero things.
Yeah, but one of those involved going out on Tuesday night,
flying to Milan,
coming back, straight in. Then it was your gig, a Beachlang played in Brighton on Friday, which was cool. Again, lots of nice guitars. That Mustang
Duosonic.
The Duosonic
that Aurora plays. She plays a Duosonic HS, which is fantastic.
Very cool. Yeah, it looked really good.
It's part of that the Offset series. They're so good.
And then obviously going to Hyde Park on Saturday. And editing the video from Milan that's going to go up. It feels like it's just been non-stop
since we last sat down.
Am I
in that video as much as I'm in Mary Spender's video?
I think you're in it more.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, there's one bit where you're moaning about the weather, so that's, you know, joyous for everyone involved. J. Cross, how good would you say you are at the guitar?
I would say
your three choices are beginner,
yes,
intermediate,
yes,
or advanced.
Probably beginner.
Okay, excellent. How would you like to move up to intermediate?
I'd really like to be an intermediate guitar player. That's the only thing I've ever wanted to be.
Good. That's about as far as you'll get.
Yes.
Unless you use Guitar Tricks.
Okay, tell me more.
Guitar Tricks is an excellent website to teach you how to move from beginner to intermediate to advanced guitar.
Okay.
Whether you're just starting out or whether, you know, you should be better than you are.
Like me.
Indeed.
Yes.
Guitar Tricks will help you move through those stages as a guitar player. And good for you, J. Cross. We have worked together with Guitar Tricks to bring a 14-day free trial to not only you, but to the listeners of the Guitar Nerds podcast.
So that means I can try it for 14 days, and if I'm not into it, just cancel it.
You can, indeed.
But I'm probably going to be into it.
I think you probably will.
Okay.
You'll notice a swift advancement of your guitar skills.
Excellent.
So do you want to know where you can get this offer?
Where can you get the offer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Can you repeat that for me?
I can. GuitarNerds.net /guitar tricks.
Is there like an app that you can use, or do you have to do it on your computer?
guitarnerds.net/guitar tricks.
Yeah.
But that'll go up on the channel on Friday. We have talked for 40 minutes about what we've done this week, so it's probably time.
Can we do some?
Nude.
Good, excellent. So, first up, a brand new, wait for it. I bet you'll never guess what I'm going
to
say.
No, you can't do this one first. You have to do it in a different order.
A brand new pedal.
Oh, right, you are. Okay.
From Electro-Harmonix.
Right, you've chosen that one first. That's good. Okay, so Electro-Harmonix, the ultimate company of bringing out random things all the time. Do you know what? I saw the advert for the Electro-Harmonix Freeze.
Yes.
The original advert. Yeah we looked at it the other day, didn't we?
What's his name?
Mike Matthews
in it. And he's wearing like some shorts and a vest that's got like a gravy stain on it.
he's got a big sweat patch.
He's got like a cigar that's like a bit broken and all chewed up on the end that he keeps taking in and out of his mouth. And he starts every sentence by going, "Dig it," and then explaining what he's going to talk about. It's so cool. He's such a dude. Anyway, Electro-Harmonix have brought out something pretty cool. They always bring out cool things. And they seem to recently be trying to push the boundaries a bit more. They're not bringing out, like, another drive, you know, another chorus, like, things like that. They're all interesting new takes on things. And that's exactly what this is. They've introduced what they're calling the Platform, which is a compressor. What makes this very interesting is that it's a compressor with 8 rotary controls.
Which is ridiculous. I can't think of another floor-based compressor that's got that much control.
No, exactly.
The Empress, I think, maybe.
Oh, maybe, actually, yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
not yeah, that true. I'm trying to...
True. No, that's probably is actually the only one.
And what makes this even cooler is that it is a compressor with 8 controls and 2 foot switches.
Yeah, I did a brief bit of reading, but what do the 2 foot switches do?
So, one of them's obviously bypass.
Yeah.
The other one, its function says drive, but actually what it's doing is switching up the attack, and I'm sure it does add some gain as well.
So it just means, by drive, it means a bit more driven.
It just means drive the pedal as opposed to... An overdrive.
Exactly. So it switches up the velocity of the attack. And what's even cooler about this is it's stereo in and stereo out.
So usable for keyboards, drum machines, all the other things that you might want to do. Or
you could plug one guitar into it and go stereo out of the compressor, which is really cool. That makes this like... It's weird, isn't it? Because I associate Electro-Harmonix with being like... These are a weird brand for... Like, you'd never have a staple standard Electro-Harmonix pedal. Like...
Well,
I know you probably would with the Micropog and things like that.
Soul Food and stuff like that.
Yeah, potentially. But I always think of them as like, yeah, you go to Boss, MXR, TC. Those are the pedals that you want to rely on gig after gig. And then you go to Electro-Harmonix because you want to sound like a Mellotron for a song. Or you want a Leslie simulator. You know, that's what Electro-Harmonix do really well. So it's weird when they do release things like this, and I'm like, well, this is actually a really professional tool. And yeah, it looks absolutely cracking.
I heard that you're a professional tool.
I'll tell you what, it's really good because we haven't seen a new... compressor from Electro-Harmonix in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
But when you think about the white finger
and the black finger, do you remember
those?
The black finger was it's a compressor with a valve in it.
Yeah.
So good.
And they still make versions of that. So there's... Oh, in fact, while we're talking about the next thing, pull up Electro-Harmonix's website.
Yes.
Because they list the pedals in categories of what they do.
Can you we did this the other week.
No, I just want to know exactly how many compressors they do.
Well, I mean, I'm just having a quick look, and from memory, the last few pedals that Electro-Harmonix have brought out is the Platform. Then there was the Tone Corset.
Yeah.
And the pedal before that was the I just hit my face on the mic, sorry.
That's good.
There was a bass preamp that had compressor in it.
That's right, yeah.
And then the pedal before that, I think, was the Blurst, which isn't really a compressor, but it's tone shaping,
but
kind of.
When you think about it, there's things like the Screaming Bird. Yeah. That's a compressor.
Well, it's a treble boost, isn't it?
So
I guess it is actually.
So this is everything in the compressor sustainer section of the Electro-Harmonics website. The bass metaphors, which is a bass preamp, yep, as Jay said, that also includes a compressor. The bass preacher, which is a simple two-control bass compressor. The legendary Black Finger, a valve-driven compressor. Then they've got the freeze, which I think is a mistake.
Well, it technically is compressing. It's
okay, fine, it can stay there. Then they have their graphic fuzz, which includes a compressor as part of it. Then they have their rack-mounted NY2A, which is a
very
compressor.
Expensive studio compressor.
Yeah, exactly. Then they have the platform, new edition. The Soul Preacher, which is a compressor. The Tone Corset, also a compressor. And, of course, the analog version of their valve compressor, the Black Finger, the White Finger.
Yeah.
So that is
10 compressors.
10 compressors.
Which is I thought there was more than that. Almost as many compressors as you've got, isn't it? Yeah. On your board right now.
So, that's what you need for that Billy Sheehan tone. You need it.
Well, I like my bass tone to sound like someone breathing in.
How was that? Good. Excellent. Jay Cross, you want to tell us about a brand new Martin guitar?
Yeah, so Martin have brought out... this is the second Martin in 2 weeks as well.
Oh, because it was Ed Sheeran last week.
I don't know why people aren't just holding... We are 2 weeks, less than that, a week from Summer Nam.
I was thinking that, because there haven't been any new electric guitars really for a month
Reverend... Matt West last week.
Yeah.
But yeah, there hasn't been any new guitars for it. I assume they're all dropping at Nam.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess Gibson also announced those... we didn't really talk about those.
Gibson's a bit different though, isn't it? Because they're just releasing different custom shop stuff all the time now. It's not like brand new product releases, because no one listening to this podcast will be able to afford any of it. So,
well, speaking of guitars that nobody's going to be able to afford.
Good. Okay, go on then.
Martin had just released the Jason Isbell
D18. Jason Isbell, popular guitarist Jason Isbell.
Well, see, the three of us were being, complete Luddites and extremely inward-facing. We didn't know who Jason Isbell is, but he is a very popular... I'm sure there's people in the United States especially...
probably screaming.
LOLing at us right now.
His surname is Isbell.
Isbell, yes. He is, I think, currently top of the country music charts.
Wow, okay.
So he's a big country music star. It's a D18. It's $5,500.
Oh my goodness. What makes it $5,500?
Is
it a cool finish? Is it gold?
No, it's not gold. No. So his thing is he wants his guitar to be very, very loud. So apparently
it's got an amp.
No, just the actual body of the guitar. So it's a D18, which is other than the Grand Jumbo, I think it's the biggest or the deepest body shape that Martin do. I think
you're looking at me for clarification.
I'm just sort of looking. I'm pretty sure it's the deepest body. He also doesn't have a pick guard on there because he thinks that will make it louder. I don't know, and it doesn't. It's like a really thin lacquer on there, which probably will have some sort of
effect.
I bet
that guitar sounds absolutely bloody fantastic.
Yeah, I bet it does. Absolutely.
I
tell you one thing that I am a little bit unkeen about, and this is something that people who have signature guitars do quite often.
Signature on the 12th fret?
Not a signature. What's worse than having a signature on the 12th fret?
Some sort of numbers or something.
Think about him.
What?
Stupid ugly face.
LED dot inlays.
No. He's got one of his tattoos.
God. That is exactly the sort of thing that you would do, Brandon.
He's got a tattoo design on the 12th fret. But fine. If that's
Eva
what you're
Gardner
into.
Did that,
yeah,
had one of her tattoos on the beneath the scratch plate of or below the scratch plate on her B
bass. Doesn't make it any better.
But yeah, there we go. So I'm sure it will sound fantastic. I mean, it's a Martin. We all know that they are absolutely fantastic guitars. But it's $5,500, so, you know,
big
it is.
Money. Something that isn't huge money, I don't think. The F-Pedals Punk Monk Envelope Filter.
So I love F-Pedals. They're totally cool. And yes, it's a mini pedal, and they're retailing at $139. So it's at the more expensive end of small.
Well,
mini
I guess mini pedals doesn't really
no,
mean
really
that
mean
anymore.
Yeah. But they, you know, more often. I guess not. I guess who are the guys that do the SL? What are they called? Boutique?
No, oh, Exotic.
Exotic. That's it. Yeah.
They've been doing expensive mini pedals for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so this is the F pedals punk monk. They've spelt the K with a Q, punk monk.
And there's a reason for that.
It's an envelope filter.
It is.
But what's really cool about it is it's an envelope filter with only actually two controls. One of them is just a flick switch between two presets, and the other one is the overall cue of the envelope filter. But what's cool about this pedal is it is based on the bass tone of legendary Atoms for Peace bass player Flea. Atoms for Peace and the Mars Volta,
legendary star of Back to the Future 2, Flea.
Yeah, the two
legendary
two great
bass
bands.
Player from the band the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That band were rubbish, but he was in two absolutely stonking bands.
Yeah,
he was in the
Fear,
most important The Mars Volta record, and
Fear,
Atoms
and
for Peace, which
was
one of the best records ever to happen.
He was also in a band with
John Frusciante, who great range of solo albums.
He was in a band with Tom Morello, Joe Strummer, and amongst other people, Old Dirty Bastard, and I think maybe Ozzy Osbourne, for a song off of the Chef Aid South Park album.
That's impressive.
I'm sure that was the lineup.
Which one's that one? Is that Kenny's Dead?
No, that's Master P. No, it's the one with Old Dirty Bastard and Ozzy Osbourne. I can't remember what it's called.
Classic.
The song's not great.
My favourite Flea performance is in Charlie Sheen movie, The Chase.
Oh, yeah, that is a great movie.
Yeah, that is a great
Henry
film.
Rollins is in that movie.
Yeah,
as
I know.
Well. Yeah, very good.
I love Henry Rollins.
Yeah.
Do you reckon they carpooled?
That's exactly what it's about. It's a car chase. The whole
movie
is
a car
chase.
Right, okay.
It's very good.
Anyway, so yes, this pedal is based on his envelope filter tone, which yes, of course, he does use for terrible band, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But it's great. It's really cool, like screen print graphics on the front, and you know, envelope filters actually, surprisingly enough, tend to be in quite large units often. So I can't think of anyone else doing a mini version of a cube.
Well,
maybe Moore probably do.
Yeah, Moore do one. Electromonics do a fairly small one, but it's in the Neo size box rather than a proper mini pedal. But I mean, the thing that impresses me is that, you know, F pedals make their stuff to a super high standard.
Exactly.
Really small footprint. They sounds like they've got the sound spot on.
Oh, and it does have an expression out on it as well, which is quite
cool.
So
if you want to use it as an actual wire, then you could do it that way as well. Yeah, I think we should try and get hold of one of these. It'd
definitely
be cool to do a demo on it.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Should we dive headfirst into a whole big old barrel of
Stion's Quest? That didn't quite work.
No.
No.
Jay, do you want to do it instead?
No.
Okay, do questions. There we go. This first question, I can't remember, did we answer this last week? Robin said, what guitar sounds most like a Gibson Les Paul without being a Les Paul? My new band needs that sound, but I don't really like the image of the Les Paul.
So does he want one that doesn't look like a Les Paul?
Yeah, I think that's the thing.
He said being, because I would go, Hagstrom Swede, but I guess he doesn't want something that looks like a Les Paul.
Yeah,
I think due to the fact that he literally says, I don't like the image of the Les Paul.
Yeah, but image could be more, it doesn't necessarily mean the looks, does it? It could mean that he doesn't want to be tied to that Gibson rock, the ultimate rock
guitar. It's tricky,
guitar,
isn't it? Because everything that sounds similar does look a lot like it, like Yamaha SG.
Or Gibson SG.
I mean, that's my first
Gibson
thought.
Gibson SG doesn't sound like a Gibson Les Paul, though.
Yeah, I mean,
well, okay.
I'll tell you what might do, actually, and ironically, the LTD Vipers or ESP Vipers, because the reason I say
Lars Fredriksson's signature.
The reason I say that is that yes, they've got an SG shape, but they're a lot thicker. And I think that will make them sound a lot more like a Les Paul than an SG does, because they're quite significantly thicker than an SG.
Yeah, yeah. So this, I did see this question. It got quite a lot of traction in the Facebook group.
Okay.
Someone suggested the Gibson Les Paul double cut, the Gibson Les Paul standard double cut, which I actually thought was a very strange choice, because I actually think the Les Paul standard double cuts I don't like at all.
Yeah, they've always been a bit of a weird
one. I like
the
juniors,
me.
Hence why I've got one. But the standards, I just think that it looks a little too blocky and too symmetrical. But that would be a good option.
Yep.
PRS?
Yeah, I guess.
Would they? It's like, it's difficult to know, isn't it? Because if you don't like the Les Paul, is it because you don't like that sort of, I guess, all sort of glued neck, carved top guitars have that sort of slightly regal look to them. That's the only way I can think of describing it.
Yeah, but you could go for something like a S2 mirror, which is very stripped back.
Flat top. Scratch plate.
Exactly, but you still get two humbuckers. It's not like there's P90s or anything in there. Still mahogany body, as far as I'm aware. I think they are mahogany body. And they're not mega money. They're, just over $1,000?
Something like that. That is a great suggestion. I'd go as far as to say I think that probably is the...
Yeah, because you've still got very heavy Les Paul vibes on there, but you're not. It's not, you know, a cherry sunburst Les Paul standard. No. So I would suggest that. I definitely, if you can't afford that, then maybe, you know, have a look at the SE series of PRS as well. But definitely look at Vipers by ESP. I just think that that's something that looks completely different. Mm-hmm. And they're not all overly metal-y. Like the Lars Fredriksson one was, what, digital camo, wasn't it, or something?
So, I mean,
that's quite metal-y. So maybe not go for that one.
Which is so weird, because he's such a traditional... like street punk geezer.
Yeah
you know, his songwriting is so quintessentially Billy Bragg.
Yeah,
you know, I don't understand why he's gone for
So those would be a couple of options. I think the mirror definitely is worth investigating. We are at the end of the podcast. We've done nearly an hour. Lots of, like I said, huge busy week this week. Loads of stuff to talk about there. Plus there was a fair bit of news. I feel like we've not devoted enough time to questions recently, so maybe next week
we'll do a
question special.
I don't know, mate, we're going to be pretty close to NAMM.
Yeah, we'll be NAMM starts on the Thursday.
Okay, well,
that's fine. So we've got 3 days before. Yeah. I'm sure some stuff will come out early. It always does.
Yeah, well, let's see. If stuff comes out, then maybe...
Who usually brings stuff out early? Orange, they quite often jump the gun, don't
Boss.
They? Well, Roland and Boss sort of already have, unless they do any more. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, there might be more. Wait, I mean,
I like it when we all pretend we don't know things.
I honestly don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know anything. So we'll have to wait and see. If there's not too much NAMM news, maybe we'll do a question special next week. So, yeah, do send questions into the Facebook group because I'd like to cover more of that.
Have we got anything else coming up?
What, in terms of stuff?
Yeah, I guess NAMM is pretty big.
Yeah, NAMM's big. Like I said, there's going to be some stuff going up on the Patreon channel. I want to talk to Marcus from Line 6, plus talk to some of the people that we met this weekend. Plus, I'm working on a few other bits. I know Matty's got a whole load of interviews lined up for the Patreon channel as well. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's now more than ever. Oh, also Gear of Yesteryear, which we need to...
Yes, I'm so excited.
We need
about
to
that.
Book a day to record. That will probably be recorded in July, so it will start going up shortly after that.
And we're going to do the stuff on the guitarist magazines as well.
That's what that is.
That is what
Gear
that
of Yesteryear,
is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Going back through the old guitarist magazine. You've got the magazines. You should know.
No, I've brought them here.
No, you bought about three of them here.
Yeah, you guys keep...
You come here every week.
I know, but I've left them at home.
Good. If you want to hear all of that good stuff, the best place to do it is patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. At $1 a month you get the regular episode ad free and early. At the $5 tier you not only get all of that, plus you get an extra half an hour every week. You also get access to all the interviews that we've just talked about, the mini series we've already recorded, like Joe Branton's Rant On, where Joe talks about things he hates, plus Gear of the Yesteryear, which is upcoming. Plus, Patreon are rolling out some new features as well.
We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, rolling out like live streams and stuff like that. So I think if we're going to do that, indeed, private live streams, Joe, you'll be able to get away with absolute
murder. Oh, I know all
murder.
About private live streams.
Indeed. Joe Branton, professional cam girl. We'll be able to do some fun stuff on there. So yeah, do check it out, patreon.com/guitar nerds. The $5 a month tier is what gets you a lot of the good stuff. If you go up to that $10 a month tier, you get your name read out on the regular episode like this.
Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Markle, Brett Holmes, Connor Smanta, Andrew Macro, Mark Cross, Jenny Sod, Andy McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul Corrigan, Jack Conboy, Will Glenn, Scott O'Brien, Matt Wine, Bill Thompson, Laurie Ayers, Paul Gravin.
Very good. You can join in the fun, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Hang out with other guitar nerds on there. Send questions in for the podcast. If we're going to do a question special next week, that's where we'll be drawing questions from. You can also follow us at Instagram, at Guitar Nerds. You can go to Twitter if you're such inclined, at Guitar Nerds. And also go to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Guitar Nerds videos, where, like I said, the Yamaha tour diary will be going up, or the Ooh. Event diary. That'll be
you're
going up.
Tour diary?
Well, I've called it Nerds on Tour. I think that's what we're going to call all our kind of... when we go away and do stuff.
That's nice.
So that'll be going
up. It's better than the Spoonerism.
Yeah, it is. So that'll be going up on Friday. Plus there's more Pedal of the Week / Guitar Nerd show going up every Friday from then on. Plus all the lists. So much going on. You just need to get involved, basically. Just subscribe in all of the relevant places and you won't miss a single thing.
Plus, is Matty back next week?
Matty's back next week.
Who's not here next week, then?
I was going to ask if we could move the recording date.
We can do that. Oh, that's funny. Last week on the podcast, you were moaning that we always change the recording date. How bizarre. We'll talk about... take that offline. We'll talk about that in our own time. Thanks for listening.
Is that the sort of thing that we can do on like a private live stream? Just have a, we'll just be like, right, if anybody wants to get involved in... figuring out when we do a
basically what we need is to crowdsource a personal assistant, basically someone who can arrange all of us to put us in the right place. But there we go. Yeah, huge busy week, loads of stuff coming up. There is, yeah, just make sure that we're also going to revamp the website, by the way. I was thinking about this the other day. We're going to be doing some stuff over there, so make sure guitarnerds.net, there's loads of stuff over there for you as well. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Bye bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.